Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. One of my favorite quotations about nonfiction comes from a man with a pretty impressive roster of fiction to his name, V.S. Naipaul, who once said, "I thought nonfiction gave one a chance to explore the world, the other world, the world that one didn't know fully." That is one of the great pleasures of hosting this show, I have to say. New England is full of fantastic nonfiction writers who help us explore the world that we don't know fully. So today, we're going to listen back to three of our favorite conversations with nonfiction authors this year. They span topics as diverse as technology and humanity, to food and memoir, to traitorous history. We'll start with MIT professor Sherry Turkle. For 30 years, she's been studying the psychology of people's relationship with technology, and she's written some of the most thoughtful and praised books on the subject, including The Second Self, Life on the Screen, and Alone Together. We spoke with her in October upon release of her latest book, Reclaiming Conversation, The Power of Talk in a Digital Age. She writes that face-to-face conversation is the most human and humanizing thing we do. And in the digital age, we're at risk of losing our ability to converse, and therefore, perhaps even our humanity. And we started with an example of that loss that Turkle sees every day at MIT. Students who no longer come to see her during office hours.
Increasingly, over the past few years, students have told me that instead of coming to office hours, which used to be really popular, I'm a good teacher and I'm a very welcoming office hour person, they'd rather send me an email and have me send an email back. And I say, why? Why would you want to avoid the face-to-face conversation? And they say, because I can send you a perfect email with my exact question, and you can send me the perfect answer. And I think when they tell me this, that this model of a transaction instead of a conversation misses the point of what a conversation is for. Because no one who loves learning loves it because they got a perfect email from a professor. It's because someone sat them down and took an imperfect idea and said, let's make it better together, or said, I take an interest in you, or I care about you, or tell me your story. And that's what they're missing by finding ways around conversation.
Interesting. So people seeing conversation as a transactional thing,
yes,
rather than a humanizing thing.
Absolutely.
So what is it, though, that conversation is supposed to do that, as you wrote,
yeah,
is the most humanizing thing that we do?
Conversation is a place where spontaneity is possible, where taking a tangent is possible, where you learn to make eye contact, to put yourself in the place of the other person, where you learn to accept a lull as something full rather than a reason to go to your phone and get a kind of constant stream of new information. And it's when we pause and reflect sometimes that we reveal ourselves to each other. And that's what we deny ourselves when we turn first and foremost to our phones.
Mm-hmm.
And the most dangerous thing, my motivation for writing the book really came at the end of my last book, when people would say to me, I'd rather text than talk.
Right.
I'd rather text than talk. And I just said, if I really take these people seriously in love and business and romance and in education, you know, what will the world really look like? And it's a world with less empathy.
Okay, so this is the central point of your book.
It is the central point of the book.
That you make the argument that technology and our use, our reliance on it, is making us less empathetic to our fellow human beings.
Yes.
But you know, I feel like I've heard this before, but you're saying now that in your new book that we have studies,
yes,
that show this?
Yes.
I mean, can you describe to us some of the studies that are bearing this out?
Absolutely. If you put a phone on the table between us, a silent phone, that, let's say I brought one into the studio, but I turned it off because I'm not an insensitive person. The mere presence of the phone on the table will change the conversation that we will have.
Even if it's not on.
And it will make the conversation, on almost on topics where we wouldn't mind being interrupted, even though we can see that the phone is turned off.
But how does it do this if it's just an inanimate object on the table?
Our technologies change not just what we do, but who we are. And not only will it change what we talk about, it will change the nature of our contact with each other. We will feel less empathic and have less investment in each other. And then they redid this study, and they put the phone not on the table between us, but kind of in the periphery of our vision. A silent phone disconnects us. And in the past 20 years, there's a 40% decline in all the ways that we know how to measure empathy among college students. These are significant numbers.
So help me out here a little bit, because there's so much in what you just said. When we say empathy,
yes,
what exactly do we mean? Because I feel like that's an important definition here.
Empathy is the ability to put yourself literally in the place of the other and imagine how you see the world. And it's that capacity that allows for a true relationship. Mm-hmm. Because I'm just not projecting onto you what I want you to be. I'm actually able to see the world through your eyes.
And you say technology, digital technology specifically, is interrupting that. It's interfering with that.
What interferes with that is the gesture we all make 50 times a day, which is we put our hand up to the face of another person, just go on pause for a second, I need to look at my phone. It's not digital. It could be anything that did that, that causes us to put another person on pause. 89% of Americans in a recent Pew study say that in their last social interaction, they had their phones out, and 82% of them also say that it degraded the conversation they were in.
So you make the argument that those numbers that you presented just now help make the argument that you outline in the book, that we kind of all intuitively know something is going on in terms of how we interact with each other. I wonder if I could just offer you a counter argument that, you know, maybe that something that's going on is, could all this be so new that this is just a difficult change and we are in the midst of forming a new kind of empathy, or that a new kind of conversation that 5 years from now we'll look back and recognize still brings us to the same place?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's been some recent talk that we feel more compassion because we know more cognitively about more places in the world. So what we have now, much as you're suggesting, is a new kind of comprehension of the world, a new kind of thing. Let's not call it empathy, but it's kind of like a knowledge of so many places in the world, and that's kind of a new, very special state of being. But that's not the same as what you get by understanding the person next to you in a relationship. So all the Googling in the world is not going to get you to understanding what the person next to you is feeling. It reminds me of a girl I interviewed whose father, very often it's parents who come in and want to bring the world to their children. And this one father was visiting his daughter on visiting day. She was 15. And he was like showing her, like, you know, who was the cinematographer of all these Woody Allen movies. And she said to him, "Daddy, stop Googling. I want to talk to you." And I think that's the difference, that we can bring ourselves more information about the world around us. But the one-to-one contact of really relating to another person, that has to happen through conversation.
I'm speaking with Sherry Turkle. Her new book is Reclaiming Conversation, The Power of Talk in a Digital Age. As you heard her say earlier, talk and conversation is the most human and humanizing thing that we do. You won't get any argument against that from me here, given that what we do here every day is talk. But she also says that technology is interfering with that most fundamentally humanizing thing. Sherry Turkle, I want to talk with you a little bit more about where we just left off about, you were telling the story about a father and daughter, because I think some of the places which people are ironically most attuned to how technology is changing relationships is in parent-child relationships, but maybe not tuned in the right way. Because you talk about in the book that kids or young people that you've spoken to say that there's a difference between the type of spaces that their parents think they're creating versus the spaces that they are.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I was one young boy, a young man I spoke to, he was 15, who said that he wants to raise his children in the kind of home that his parents think he's growing up in, not the one he's really growing up in. So I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he says, well, they think that we're growing up in a home where there's conversation. And in fact, we're growing up in a home where there's texting at breakfast and dinner, and I can't get my father's attention on a walk to the grocery store. And what I've found is that what makes this book optimistic and what makes me truly optimistic is that young people who've grown up with this technology have a sense that there's something amiss because they can't get their parents' attention.
Uh-huh.
It's the generation, you know, who grew up thinking that the best they would get was a Dick Tracy two-way wrist radio, and now they have a smartphone. It's like amazing. They're the ones who are sort of glommed onto their technology, and they have overstepped. And there's one father I interviewed who remembers giving his older child a baths and talking to her when she was a baby, and now he has a 2-year-old and 10 years later, and he just does his email on his iPhone when she's in the bathtub. I mean, he's not talking to her the way he did for the older child. These children are growing up without talk, and they describe these younger children how they don't want to have this kind of life when their parents, when they become parents.
And they're describing that already.
They are describing that already. And they're angry at their parents, and it's easy to find to see children who are grabbing phones away from their parents, who are saying, "Mommy, put down the phone. I want to talk to you. Daddy, stop Googling. I want to talk to you."
But Sherry Turkle, you're tugging at my heartstrings, yeah, right? Because we all are. Everyone's always worried about their children and about the kids. But is this an anti-technology book?
No,
then?
It's a pro-conversation book.
What's really the difference?
I'm really not anti-technology. I'm pro-conversation. There are phones. We don't have to give up our phones at all. We just have to put them in their place. You use your phone, but then when you are with the person you care about, you put your phone away and you talk to them. I mean, it really is as simple as that. This is work we know how to do, and we have every technology we need. We have each other. We don't need to invent anything. Mm. I mean, there are baby bouncers now that have a slot for an iPad.
I know.
This is not a good. I mean, author's choice. My favorite line in my book is, "Technology makes us forget what we know about life." You know, we know that a mother should be talking to her child when that child is bouncing, or a father, parents, adults should be talking to a child when that child is bouncing.
Mm.
No, there's no place there for a technology. So keep your technology, enjoy it, use it to maximize your joy, you know, your connections with other people, your education, your creativity. But when you are with the people you care about, talk to them.
So you've actually been, you know, in previous books, touched on similar themes, creating sacred spaces in the home or even in the workplace. Sacred spaces being, this is a place that where technology should not interfere. But in this book, I feel like you go a little deeper even, because you really talk about the profound importance of solitude, that it's not just an absence of technology or being face to face with someone and having a conversation that matters. But as you point out, it's the conversation that we are missing with ourselves.
Yes.
And ourselves as individuals and individual human beings that we get from true solitude that we don't have anymore, that we don't need to have anymore when we can be instantly entertained or informed with a smartphone in our hand.
This is one of you asked about studies. This is a place where there's been a stunning study where students were asked... were told that they were going to be asked to sit alone from 6 to 15 minutes, and they were told that they couldn't have a device or a book, and they said fine, and they were asked, do you think you would want to give yourself an electroshock during that period? And they said, well, absolutely not. I mean, that's crazy. And then they were put in that situation. They were just asked to sit alone in a chair without a device or a book. And they began to give themselves electroshocks after 6 minutes. We begin to see being alone as a problem that we think technology should solve. and we go immediately. We crave our phones. We crave that stimulus. And the reason that it's the link between solitude and the capacity for empathy, the capacity for conversation is so strong, as you're pointing out, is that you need to feel complete in yourself in order to turn to another person and really hear what they have to say, rather than just projecting, you know, what you need them to be onto them.
You know, you remove the word technology or device or digital age, and what you just described sounds a lot like addiction. I mean, like, if you cannot tolerate not having the thing for 6 minutes.
What we are addicted to is constant stimulation. I don't think it makes sense to think of the particular device. What we have to learn to do is be okay with ourselves. I think the reason I don't like talking about addiction is because I think that these devices are here to stay and there's no reason to get hopeless about them. You don't have to give up your device. You just have to give it a place in your life where it's not interfering with your life with the people around you and your life with yourself. Mm. And I believe this can be done, but not if you don't first and foremost learn to be content with yourself.
Right.
I think this is why people are turning to meditation, to yoga, to mindfulness. I think this is kind of the tip of the iceberg of people trying to make the corrections.
So there are quite a few people who want to join us. I'll turn to them in a minute, but I do have to ask you something because in reading your book, and even in just listening to you right now, I feel like there's this deep undercurrent of almost of sadness, of this sense of loss, of what we risk losing with this inundation of technological inputs. But isn't this something that, like, we've always, this sense of loss we've always faced with any technological advancement that humanity has come by? I mean, this might be an extreme example, but for example, what about when there was the explosion of the written word, of the printed word, actually, more specifically? I can imagine then there might have been some people saying, you know, put down your books, lift up
yes.
your nose, return to the oral tradition, because
yes.
there's nothing as powerful as hearing someone, an elder, tell you a story, the inflection in their voice, the tone, their gesture. Nothing's going to replace that. The book is making you less human. I mean,
yes,
'twas ever thus, no?
I think that's a wonderful point. And I think we have to look now at where we are and where we've come on this long line of turning away from community, turning away from listening and telling, to the point we are now. And I think we're kind of at ground zero in this progression, where literally we have robot dolls.
Oh, the new Barbie,
the new
yes.
Hello Barbie that say, hi, I'm your friend. I have a sister. Do you have a sister? Let's talk about how I don't like my sister and you, who offer us pretend empathy, which is toxic to a child, because a child needs to learn real empathy, not pretend empathy. And we have devices that literally don't allow us to make eye contact with the people we're with, because we are compelled to turn away from them to something else. Mm. So I'm completely with you that this is not the beginning, but perhaps, you know, we're far along on a progression. But the point that we have come to is a point where I feel we need to, you know, stop at the point we're at now and say, if we go further from where we are now, really, are we living in a world of no meaningful exchange?
Yeah. Well, forgive me for breaking eye contact, because I'm just look at the clock here and be sure I haven't run out of time to get a lot of us, as many callers as I can, because we are running down on time. So let's see who we can fit in here. Ray Ellen is calling from Lunenburg. You're on the air, Ray Ellen.
Magna and Sherry, this is such a good conversation. So I completely agree with you that we need to maintain oral tradition and actually teach parents how to engage with their children. I think kids come out knowing how to do it and they forget. But I'd like to add to the conversation that my experience with my teen sons is that they use the technology as a bridge to create conversations. So my older son is a developer and has met adults and been able to be invited to conversations halfway across the world that he never would have been engaged in if he didn't have the technology. And then he turns those into face-to-face interactions. And my younger son socializes around his phone. His friends and he will be co-creating content. They'll be making videos, running their Snapchat pages, looking at videos. So they're actually using the technology to get closer to one another. And yes, they do need to put the phones down and make eye contact and touch one another and have conversations. But I don't want to go too far in just saying the technology is bad, because I'm experiencing with my children that that technology is giving them something I literally cannot give them at the dinner table.
Ray Ellen, thank you so much for your call and your insight there. Sherry Turkle, how would you like to respond?
I agree. In other words, if your use of technology is opening your world, is bringing you into new conversations, is bringing you into face-to-face encounters, and when you're using your technology, you're with other people in collaborative spaces, I'm a complete enthusiast.
So that seems to be striking. I mean, Ray Ellen is naturally describing the kind of balance that you
absolutely
say we should. Okay. Well, let's turn to Erin now, who's calling from Newton. You're on the air, Erin.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a question for Ms. Turkle. I am a high school teacher, and so I'm used to all day asking my students to put their phones away. Then I get home, and I drive carpools with my three school-age children, and my sons are horrified because I want to ask their peers to put their phones away, because when I drive these carpools, it's silent. All five or six kids are on their phones while I'm driving. I'd love to know what Ms. Turkle thinks, if it's wrong for me to enforce this in the car. Thank you so much.
No, I think I've been using the phrase ground zero a lot. I don't know what but I think the car is actually one of the most important sacred spaces, one of the most important places to say this is a device-free zone where we talk. You're not texting. You're thank God not texting, and this is a place where let there be silence if there needs to be silence, but that silence should be not because they're texting, but because they're thinking of what to say. Let them play games. Let them start to chat. I really support your making the car into a place without devices.
Erin, thank you so much for your call. Sherry Turkle, we've got just about 2 minutes left here, and I wanted to actually return to a place where our previous caller, Ray Ellen, left us, because she seemed to be describing, as you were saying, this idea that we should be more intentional. That's your word from your book.
Yes.
About how we use our devices. But how do we get there? I mean, because the ubiquity of the devices, it's hard to deal with sometimes. If, you know, the air is everywhere we breathe, how do we be more intentional about separating ourselves from it in the right ways?
Well, you know, I think we have a lot of inner knowledge that we just haven't allowed ourselves to use. That dad who says to me, you know, I'm in the bathroom with my daughter giving her a bath and I'm doing my email, I hate this. He knows that he needs to be more intentional with his technology. These moms who were at, there's this wonderful study by a Boston pediatrician who studied fast food restaurants and found that there was hardly she studied, I think, 50 cases, and there was hardly a case where the parent or caretaker was looking at the children in their care as opposed to just being on their phone. They know when you talk to these caretakers that they should be talking to the children with them. They can be more intentional. So I think when you're with your technology and you're with other people, that is the situation where you say to yourself, is this a moment where I'm really turning off and putting on pause the person with me, where I'm breaking off a conversation that needs to happen? And when you're alone, ask yourself, am I going to this phone because I can't stand a moment where I'm gathering myself? Is this a moment when I can find solitude as opposed to a Google search?
I think that is the toughest moment of all, to be perfectly honest. In a way, it's almost easier for us to band together and say, okay, let's all put our phones away. But it's when you're on your own.
Yes.
and you feel that itch to check your
right.
text messages, that's tough. I mean, I have to say, I try to put my phone away at home because I've got two little ones as much as I can. But as soon as they go to bed, I'm reaching for the phone. It's hard.
Well, you know, they say that boredom is your imagination calling to you to pay attention to what's inside you, not to go to the outside. And I think we've forgotten the importance of boredom and sort of mind wandering. I think we're going to rediscover this.
Well, the new book is Reclaiming Conversation, The Power of Talk in a Digital Age. It is Sherry Turkle's latest book. Such a pleasure to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much for coming
in. Thank you.
We spoke with Sherry Turkle back in November. When we come back, a memoir of resilience, love, and food. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.